This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between, because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
9:09, got a big hour planned for you. We'll talk to J.P. Morrell, New Orleans City Council member, about LaToya Cantrell's latest folly. And then we're going to talk with our friend Dr. Judy Ho, clinical forensic neuropsychologist, host of the Supercharged Life podcast. We always like to talk about mental health, and today we'll address over-parenting. How much do you help your kids and manage their time, and how much is too much, how much is too little? Looking at a story here from Ross Jackson, quoting Catherine Terrell and Jeremy Fowler of ESPN, that Derek Carr and his camp were willing to test the open market, which would have meant Carr could go out in search of a potential trade where he could be a starting quarterback somewhere else. And if the Saints and Carr, according to the story, had gone that route and found a partner, the team would have saved just over $11 million against the 2025 salary cap had things not been adjusted further. But instead, they decided to restructure his contract, which saves up to almost $31 million and keeps him on the team. So we'll see how that works out. And again, before you run somebody, you better have somebody better. J.P. Morrell joins us now, New Orleans City Council member. How you doing, J.P.?
I'm good, Tommy. How are you doing this morning?
I'm all right. I saw something on Twitter about your thoughts on Mayor Cantrell's trip. I didn't get a chance to watch it because I thought I'd just let you redo it here.
Well, I mean, it was a three-minute video, and I'm not really good. I mean, I know I used to act, was an actor back in the days, but
were you?
I was kind of in a fugue state. I was kind of in a fugue state when I did that one. So
you were an actor?
Yeah, I was at college, and college mostly. But
really?
Yeah.
Where were you in?
I did a Glass Menagerie, Rained Some Fish, No Elephants. And I did something else, but back in the day before I became a lawyer and a politician, I had aspirations.
You know, fun fact: I toured as Annie. The actual Little Orphan Annie, the young lady in that play for a couple, about 8-10 years, I guess.
I would love to have seen that, Tommy. I think that would have been absolutely amazing.
I never did. Yeah, I outgrow the role, really. It's just my hair fell out. Let's talk about, about LaToya and what's going on with that. Go ahead.
So essentially the council passed an ordinance, a law, that restricted travel through the end of April, because the mayor and the administration has repeatedly asserted that we are in a budget crisis, though they've presented no evidence to support that we actually are in a budget crisis. So we said, hey, if according to the chief financial officer, according to the CAO, we are broke, so let's act like we're broke. So we passed a resolution, an ordinance, a law restricting needless expenditures on travel and food and basically things that are not essential through the end of April, when we have our next revenue estimating committee meeting. Shortly after passing that, the mayor hung around in town for Mardi Gras, and once the party was over, she took the party elsewhere. So that's where we're at. We found out about the travel, like the public did, via a press release late Sunday night where she'd already left town. And yesterday, I sent a letter to the administration, particularly to the chief financial officer and the CAO, trying to get more information on this trip, because from all purposes, from what we see from the outside looking in, the trip violates the law. So we're trying to get more information on that. But Tommy, the line that I really took out of the thing, which I think is what you missed, which is my great line on YouTube, back and watch it. I said I would call it childish, but that would be an insult to children. Mm-hmm. And we keep forgetting this whole thing started because the mayor refuses to give the schools what they're owed with this fake deficit that she keeps touting with no evidence.
Tell me about that whole thing and refresh our memory. Some of this got lost and caught up in Mardi Gras, but about this whole school board thing and how...
Go ahead. So the school board, the city's been in litigation with the school board since 2019 because the city's been illegally collecting an administrative fee on a series of taxes voters pass directly. It's illegal because when voters vote to give an entity money, you can't just make up an administrative fee that wasn't considered in the actual vote. That is settled law. The city lost a lawsuit with Downtown Development over the exact same thing. It's a lawsuit we were going to lose. So in the midst of us doing that lawsuit, the school board, in combination with the city, misestimated their revenue and have a $35 million roughly shortfall as of a month ago. So basically, leaders of the school board, leaders of the council came together and said, listen, let's settle this lawsuit so that we can get this $135 to $150 million lawsuit, you know, from dangling overhead, and give y'all a cash infusion to get you through this 1 year of a misestimation of revenue. The city, and by the city I mean the administration, the council, and the school board reached a settlement in October, and the CAO, Gil Montaño, was at the press conference on behalf of the mayor touting this great settlement that we did. Everyone does a settlement. Everyone thinks everything's settled. Mayor shows up in January and says, you know what? I changed my mind. Since I physically wasn't at the press conference, nothing stands. Everything's back. And by the way, we're broke. So even if we did agree to a settlement, we can't afford it anymore. And the council and the school board were both a little taken aback. And more importantly, we had just passed the budget in December, Tommy. So we were really kind of having a hard time saying, well, how did we go from a surplus in December to a deficit in January? And that's kind of where things start to unravel.
JP, I was wondering yesterday aloud, just, you know, the Vappy thing and the Pontalba and the trips and all of that gets the attention, and rightfully so. But I think an untold story of LaToya Cantrell's time in office would be the way the city's been held back, just in terms of doing basic business. When you look at street repairs and the way that's been managed, et cetera, do you think that there's, what are your thoughts on that? Let me phrase it this way. What are your thoughts on that, where the shenanigans got some of the attention, but maybe a lot of the stuff is behind closed doors and just in everyday running of government, the stuff that didn't happen that could have happened, and how long is it going to take the city to recover from that?
Well, I mean, I think a theme that I would say is common right now with the Cantrell administration in my time on the council this first term has been they utterly distract themselves from doing the work that needs to be done. The reality is that I don't think anyone would complain about the mayor doing business trips if the work of the city was being done itself. And I think part of the frustration is we have real issues here right now that need to be solved. And rather than solve those issues, why would any mayor or any elected official be traipsing across the country? If you can't get your work done at home, you shouldn't be taking what essentially are quasi-taxpayer vacations. We have like 17 sister cities. She's apparently going to some Yale thing to talk about whatever, but we have real problems here. We have a school board that's owed $20 million. But beyond that, as you said, we have legitimate infrastructure issues. Sewage and Water Board has challenges, and the mayor is the chair of Sewage and Water Board. I mean, it's just one of those things, Tommy, where I think the tail of the tape after this administration will really just be missed opportunities and distractions. And I certainly hope whoever the next mayor is more focused on the job than the perks, because I will tell you, in my brief time in city government, there are a lot of elected officials who really like the perks of office and not doing the work.
With that in mind, no names, no indication of an endorsement or anything like that, but what should people, the voters in New Orleans, in your opinion, look for and insist on when it comes to choosing the next mayor?
Well, the next mayor, when you're looking at who is running for mayor, and Tommy, you know, and I'll reiterate it, I'm not. But what I'm looking for in the next mayor is someone who has a track record of doing stuff. We have had a lot of politicians, and I would say the current mayor is one of them, that talk a lot in platitudes and about all the stuff they're going to do. But you have to look at the record of what they've actually done and how much of it was lip service and how much of it was accomplished. Because I will tell you, the city of New Orleans cannot afford another feel-good mayor, someone who's going to have a great story about who, where they came from or what they're going to do when they actually haven't done anything. And I would say out of all the names that have been floating around, there are a lot of people who have a very public track record of what they've accomplished or not accomplished. And I would look at resumes. And like I said, not just how long you've been in government, but what you've actually accomplished in government, because the damage that's been done to the city, the amount of work that's going to take to fix it, you need someone who's got a proven track record of results, not just being elected repeatedly.
Thank you, JP. So what happens now with reimbursement of the city, or did the people are texting in, did the mayor do anything criminal or civil with this, or do we know yet about with the trip?
We don't know the specifics. The mayor's press release was light on the specifics, which I think was intentional. I sent a letter to the CAO and the chief financial officer asking for the details, for example, who went on the trip, who paid for what, because the prohibition was pretty broad, not just on the mayor, but also on the mayor's entourage, who traveled with her, because all that's prohibited. So we're looking to get that information, Tommy, and then we'll take the next step from there. I will say that we are re-looking at the possibility that maybe having made this terminate in April might have been too soon, and potentially expanding this ban further on, because when you see someone who's already breaking the rules, you realize that this is probably going to be a more long-term process.
Final thoughts for you, JP. No tents along the carnival route. It's that simple. No tents.
Well, Tommy, we're going to have that post-Mardi Gras meeting with the different people who were participating in Mardi Gras, including law enforcement, sanitation, and the crews, and that will certainly be part of the conversation. I've talked to a lot of people, especially law enforcement, who said the lack of all the tents on Mardi Gras Day was a game changer as far as them being able to keep the route secure and safe.
The journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single step. The journey toward a better Mardi Gras begins with no tents. Thank you, JP.
Thanks,
appreciate
Tom.
It. All right, JP Morrell, New Orleans City Council member. We'll take a break. We come back, we're talking about overparenting. How much of a problem is that? How much do you help your kids get through life? And look, your parent, that you from the time, I told my kid that one time, from the time I first saw the sonogram, I was all in. All the chips are in the middle of the table. I'm all in. But at what point do you butt out and back off while continuing to help? How do you balance it all out? Tell me how you handle parenting, whether it's a 5-year-old, 10-year-old, 15-year-old, 25-year-old. Let me know. 504-260-1870. Tommy Tucker back in a flash with Dr. Judy Ho here on WWL. All right, 9:27 now on this beautiful Tuesday morning. Judy Ho joins us now. Dr. Judy Ho, clinical and forensic neuropsychologist, host of the Supercharged Life podcast. How you doing, Dr. Judy?
I'm doing well, Tommy. How are you?
It sounds like Luca might be sleeping, perhaps.
I know. I'm trying not to wake him up, so we have an uninterrupted interview today.
Well, let's hope the cough syrup works. I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. Let's talk about overparenting, because I think what we're talking about here is allowing kids to fail and learn their own lessons. And I would think this almost goes back to, and I want to start it here, Dr. Judy, one of the things that amazes me, and even when my child was younger, I didn't get all up in it, but how sometimes moms can, you know, get extremely competitive with, well, mine's walking at 3 months, or I'm picking a number here. Well, mine was walking at 2 months, really? Well, mine was walking in the womb, really? Well, that must have been uncomfortable. It just seems as though sometimes parents get all caught up in this, when in fact, a lot of stuff kind of like evens out eventually, doesn't it?
It really does. That's really interesting. So I love those examples, because I'm actually, by nature, I think, a very competitive person. And oftentimes I'm competitive with myself as well as with other people, but mostly with myself. Like, how can I do better than the last time, et cetera. So anyway, it's interesting, because as a parent, I'm kind of the opposite. And I'm not really sure how that happened. I understand that it's not a race, I guess, but I'm not really sure even how I got to this place. I'm not saying that I'm more zen than other parents. I'm definitely not. Mm-hmm. But it's more just this idea of meeting certain milestones or giving them some kind of head start that, like you said, at the end, it all evens out. And I'll give you an example, Tommy. So, you know, Luca was a bit of a late talker. So mm-hmm. his comprehension was great, you know, but speaking-wise, he was definitely a bit behind the average. And, of course, I was concerned to the point where I could tell that he couldn't communicate very well expressively and he would get frustrated because he would understand everything. Mm-hmm. But I wasn't so concerned about him not meeting a specific milestone because I talked to other parents and they're like, yeah, you know what? That happened to our kid. And then now we can't shut him up, mm-hmm. you know, and that's definitely the experience we're having with Luca now. I mean, he's all caught up. It's been caught up for a while, but now it's like, why, Mom? Why? Why? And then look at this and look at that. And it's like, it's so awesome. But sometimes I'm like, so many questions, you know? And so I do think that it's interesting because when you take the bigger view, usually it all works out. And as far—
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous, but I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code SHAVE at checkout. That's harrys.com, code SHAVE. Enjoy!
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or whenever my favorite team is playing late. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before tip-off.
Street Easy asked former New Yorkers if there's anything they miss about life in New York City.
Let me put it this way. House with a home theater sounds appealing. But that's until you realize you no longer have a theater district.
Whether you're looking to rent or it's time to buy, Street Easy has the local expertise you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. Street Easy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
If you're thinking about GLP-1s for weight loss, listen up. You must make sure you're maintaining your muscle mass while you're losing weight. Otherwise, you can slow your metabolism and regain the weight. Omisid, a natural superfood protein shake, has been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. It optimizes and supercharges your metabolism so you can lose weight easily. Use Omisid with GLP-1s or as a natural alternative. Find out more and see the university studies at omised.com. That's AlmaSed.com.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Is not helping them with every single thing, I have to resist that too, because overall it helps them to develop life skills, right? You want them to be able to do some things independently and to have confidence in themselves. And that's the only way that they're going to build confidence is overcome adversity on their own.
When my kid got into high school, I handed over my college ring, which was promptly lost, and said, here, and I explained the reason for this is I got my degree. I'm done doing homework. Mm-hmm. You're on your own. You're in high school now. And always the child did do the homework, but it's like, this is you. You write your own papers, right. You do your own this, you do your own that. I did my turn. This is your turn. And I only say that as an illustrative thing, because even at 3 and 5, I think, Dr. Judy, what's going on with you, and Lord knows I'm no licensed clinical neuropsychologist, but I think because you are a competitive person, you realize somewhere that Luca has to learn how to compete on his own. You can't always be there for him, and there's no time like the present to learn. Accurate?
Right, exactly. I mean, you're not going to be there for them, you know, as much as you would like to believe that that's true, you're not going to be here forever. And you need to be able to impart on them some life skills that they can take along the way. And like you said, there's no time like the present. I mean, so much of this development happens at a young age. When people say that they struggle with self-esteem throughout their life, their confidence, this didn't just come out of nowhere one day in their adulthood. This is something that developed as a child through various experiences. And so the more that you can give your child experience of being able to overcome things on their own, and it can be really small things, like the minute they ask for something, you don't have to just run to get it for them. You know, you can just wait, instruct them how to get it themselves and supervise, right? I mean, it's even such small things like that. It really makes such a big difference. And sometimes we're just, I think it comes from a place of love. Of course, like you want to protect them from pain and harm, but if you don't allow them to learn those lessons in the moment, you lose that opportunity. And then I think it's partially why, Tommy, we're having more and more what sometimes we call like a failure to launch situation, mm-hmm. where somebody might be in their late 20s, 30s, or even 40s, and they just can't really be independent. You know, I think that's the downside of being this extremely doting parent, but maybe to such an extreme that you're actually not giving them a good experience.
So as a parent of a 2-year-old, 4-year-old, 5-year-old, what have you, even a newborn, I guess you got to do a lot of stuff for them. Certainly you don't ever want a child to injure themselves. You don't want to say, go ahead, touch a stove. There, you'll learn. Obviously you don't want that to happen. But
right. When
it comes to the analogy of touching a stove, as it comes to tying your shoes or failing this or that, the other thing, how do you get parents to just say, just like, you know what, I guess in the animal kingdom, right? Mothers have to teach the kids how to, I don't know if fathers do in the animal kingdom or not, but they have to run through their errors and find their way through. You know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah, definitely. You know, I think that for so many people, it's just maybe not trusting yourself to an extent too. You know, it's not just not trusting your child, but there's a part of you that maybe doesn't trust yourself, you know, to let go and to be okay with it. And I think that that sometimes is the hardest thing about parenting, is that it also forces you to confront certain things that you feel about yourself, maybe some skeletons in your closet, maybe some trauma or stresses you experience as a child, and you're like, I'm going to do it differently. It's like, well, guess what? There's nothing, there's no such thing as a perfect parent. It's always good to want to self-improve, but we have to make sure and be careful not to put our own neuroses on our child, right? And it's just like inevitable. We're going to do it from time to time. But when you recognize that you're doing it, then like, got to let go of that gas pedal a little bit, right? Just got to take your hands off a bit and say, you know what, I have to trust myself that I have given my child enough skills that they can overcome this, and also that they're resilient enough that even if they're upset at this one thing, this one mistake, this one thing not going their way, that they're going to get back up and try again. Like, I trust that I have given them that lesson, right? So I think sometimes it's like actually about not trusting yourself when we don't let go. Like, maybe you haven't provided your child with enough yet and they don't know what to do. It's like, well, I think that it's just important to self-reflect through the process and to try to set yourself up also not for so much disappointment, because I think that sometimes parents, when they have been this extra level of doting, as their child grows up, they become super disappointed. Like, why can't they do this better? Why can't they have thought of how to solve their problem here? It's like, well, it would have been better if you had just let go of the reins a little bit when they were younger so they can learn these lessons on their own.
Somebody texted in about with different children, though. They said they have 5 children and not everybody is the same. Some need more help than others. How do you parse that?
Yeah, I think that you have to definitely watch your child. I think that obviously every single person is different, personality-wise, temperament, their skill sets at different ages, especially when you have siblings. Like, hey, your brother learned how to do that when he was 5. How come you don't know how to do it yet? Well, that's, you know, that's obviously all things we do have to take into consideration. There are some children that just need a little bit more help than others at different ages. Others are just more naturally independent. Certainly have to take that into account. But I also would say that it's a bi-directional process. If you see a child that seems a bit more needy and then you end up over-providing for them, that reinforces the neediness. So I think you have to find some kind of balance where it's like, okay, they really truly need more. But always with that eye of, you know, how do we balance this out and still give them some agency so that they can try some things on their own. I think one thing to do is to avoid comparing them with their siblings, especially directly to their face, as a way to try to motivate them. I think that definitely causes not only rifts between the siblings, but certainly self-esteem issues. You hear that a lot oftentimes with older versus younger children. You know, parents sometimes can't help themselves. Obviously, that's a reference point. But I would say that definitely try your best to refrain from doing that sort of comparison, recognizing them for the strengths that they do have, and then helping them to build up any areas that you think need more development.
Now, let me take a break. We'll pick it up. We're coming back talking to our friend, Dr. Judy Ho, clinical forensic neuropsychologist, host of the Supercharged Life podcast. Every other Tuesday, we talk about mental health. Today, we're addressing over-parenting. How much do you help your kids and manage their time? And as I said earlier, before Dr. Judy came on, I told my kid not too long ago that from the time I saw that sonogram, I was all in. All of my chips were in the center of the table. Dr. Judy, a poker player, she can appreciate that analogy, but that I'm all in and I'm always there. But you got to occasionally, what's the phrase I used? Butt out and back off. So how do you do that as a parent, right, especially of an older child? So you see maybe they're headed for trouble, but sometimes they got to get in that trouble themselves. One thing I have been preaching, and man, until I'm blue in the face, is credit card problems, because that, to me, is the financial equivalent of touching the hot stove. You don't want that to happen. More when we return, 504-260-1870. If you have any questions or comments right now, traffic, WWL. 9:44, 16 till 10, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to our friend Dr. Judy Ho, clinical forensic neuropsychologist, host of the Supercharged Life podcast, mother of three-year-old Luca, I got that right?
Yeah, he's three now.
Three, yeah. So you have no idea, Dr. Judy, what kind of wild ride you have ahead of you. As a matter of fact, you know how sometimes when people pass away, you'll hear somebody at the service say, well, finally, they can rest, they're at peace? They're talking about parents when they say that. When it comes to older children, teenagers, et cetera, and letting them make their own mistakes, you don't want to make a mistake where, get arrested for drunk driving. You'll see the consequences. No, you don't want that to happen. And consequently, when they get to be young adults, and we've had credit card experts on it tell us best way to get them used to using credit is to put them as a co-signer on your credit card, and that allows them to build a credit history while you can keep an eye on things. Somebody texted in and said, I'm in my early 50s, my parents late 70s. I still seek their guidance. I wish my parents were still around to get their guidance. So how do you know when to speak up and know when to butt out and back off?
Yeah, you know, I think it obviously it's a case-by-case situation, but certainly if one of your older children or teenagers is telling you, hey, mom, let me try this on my own. Hey, dad, like, I got this one. I think that's just a moment to take note. It doesn't necessarily mean that they're right. I mean, obviously, teenagers are going to say that they want to do everything on their own probably at some point. But I think it does give you just a chance when they say that. It's a reminder to pause and say, yeah, you know what? Do they got this one? Maybe they do, you know? And so I just think that it's about really about looking at the situation, certainly still imparting what you think is helpful. You know, you can squeeze in some advice in there. You can say, well, let me at least walk you through this first couple of steps, and then we can take it from there, right? So it's not like an all or none situation most of the times. It's like, hey, let me give you a little bit of guidance. Also let you know that I'm here if you have questions. But yeah, okay, I trust that you can try this on your own, right? And I also think that it depends on the gravity of whatever situation it is. If it's something that's super high stakes, it's like, hey, no, you don't got this one. We really do have to do this together. Plus, you don't actually have all the skill sets. And so I just think that it is important to stay flexible. And then, of course, sometimes you're going to make a miscalculation. You're going to make a mistake. Maybe was too overprotective or maybe should have done more. But then you just got to roll with it and take that as a lesson. You know, again, you're not going to be a perfect parent. But as long as you're trying to be mindful, you're self-assessing, and also you're being honest with yourself about how much your child is developing. I know that that's very hard sometimes for parents to see, like, oh, you're still a baby. It's like, no, but no, they're 15. You know, they've got a lot of life experience now, you know? So also just being willing to let go when it's time, right? I think that it can be hard because sometimes parents can be in denial and missing those good old days where, you know, you were their person. They just wanted you to help them with everything.
Yep. That is going to happen. Those days do happen where you wish, well, gee, you needed me for everything. Now, all of a sudden, every couple of days.
I don't need you anymore.
Yeah, exactly. That's right. But that's good because, again, and I think you and I had this conversation before, that the idea or the job of a parent is to get the kid ready to fly the nest. So it's like the Saturday Night Live skit from years ago. Do you really want your grown kid hanging out with you as your best friend? No, you don't want that, right? When it comes to being a parent, I think, you summed it up. I think all you can do is love the child unconditionally and always act in their best interest. And, not everything's going to be perfect, but that's all any of us can do. Agree?
Absolutely. And I think that as long as you can do that, you're being a good parent, so you got to also forgive yourself for any mistakes along the way and take some of that pressure off. I think we put a lot of pressure on ourselves as parents. So let's ease that up a little bit too.
Why do you think overparenting is on a rise? And, we got a problem here with Mardi Gras where, and you've been here before for Mardi Gras, people now are setting up tents because tents became available and all of a sudden tents become part of the tradition, which they aren't, and just gums it up for everybody. But I think everybody wants the perfect thing for their child, the perfect seat, the perfect this, the perfect that, at the expense of others. Is there a tipping point where people started being so crazy about having everything perfect for their kids from a clinical standpoint that psychologists can trace back to, or is it a slowly evolving trend? I've always wondered about that.
Yeah, I think it's a couple of things. One is just a biological and evolutionary basis for that, which is like, this is your progeny, so you want the best for them. This is a kind of a, survival of the fittest, trying to make sure that your kid gets the best resources, the best everything. That's definitely subconsciously operating at all times on some level. But I think the other thing is most of the times, I think most parents are trying to maybe course correct for certain things that they didn't get enough of in their childhood, things that they wish were different in some way, right? And as parents are trying to essentially have a do-over, which can be very reparative and can be very healing. But obviously, when taken to the extreme, it can make you kind of a selfish parent, an entitled parent, kind of got blinders on, can't see the big picture, So I think it's just important to take a step back. And if there are childhood wounds of your own that you need to heal, think about healing them in different ways than just through your children and with your parenting. You got to heal yourself, let go of certain things that, you didn't like about your childhood, and take a more even approach to everything. I think that can happen a lot. And you've heard a lot about that, right, Tommy? Mm-hmm. Where sometimes parents will say, I never got to figure skate when I was a kid. So like, my kid's going to be a figure skater. It's like, yeah, but what if they don't want to be a figure skater, right? But it happens. It happens. We all do it from a good place, from a good place in our hearts. But sometimes I think we just have blinders on when we operate from those places.
I was like that with dynamite juggling. Thankfully, the kids said no. When it comes to somebody texted in here about valedictorian in high school, and they're trying to let the kid enjoy the high school years, but it's very, I don't know if there's a frustrated, person and want to be valedictorian or not, but that they're concerned about their kid being valedictorian, and they're looking at it as different football rankings that come out. They're constantly checking the GPAs and everything else. What would you say to a parent that is obsessed with that? Not from the child standpoint, but from the parent standpoint, how to deal with that obsession?
Well, it's a good question. And I think that you were asking how the child would deal with that, or from a parent standpoint?
The parent. How can a parent deal with it? Because it seems like from the text, the parent's obsessed with it more than the child. And the parent's constantly comparing, like I said, the NFL college football playoffs, like you do or the college football playoffs. So how does a parent control this obsession and just, again, back off and butt out?
Yeah, it can be really hard because you get into these, I would say that they're almost like bad habits, and then you're just doing it and maybe there's not even a reason connected to it anymore. And I feel like anytime you need to, just curb a bad habit of any kind, it's important just to take stock of your values, right? Like, values are not goals. Values are not just things that you want to check off a list. They're things that you want to live your life by things that really create meaning in your life. It's how you want to be remembered or talked about when you're not in the room. You know, it's things that make you feel good about how you're living your life. And it's important to say, hey, what are my top three values? And how is this behavior helping or hindering those values, right? So if your top values are, you know, let's say family and integrity and community, let's just say those are top three values for this person. It's like, okay, well, is what I'm doing in service of those values or not? And, you know, really have an honest conversation with yourself about that. And if it's not, then ask yourself, what's one small thing I could do to try to move this in the right direction? What's one small thing I could do to honor this value of family or honor this value of integrity? Like, what would I do in this situation if that was really top of mind for me? And I think that, you know, it's just those little tiny things that you check off with yourself, you know, that can really help in these situations. Because once you go down this rabbit hole, it is hard to stop. And it can feel like such a compulsion that you're just not sure how to find your way out of it. So I always think that values is a great reset.
I guess also, too, you would have to look at what really are you chasing? Because I don't know that valedictorians generally go on to cure cancer or bring world peace or anything else. And that's no disrespect to valedictorians. I'm just saying.
Right? Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It doesn't really mean that much, although during that moment, it feels like it means a lot, right? Like, you know, wow, like it's the biggest achievement. I want to say that my child is the best, but it doesn't actually predict what they go on to do or how good of a person they are and how much they actually achieve and how great their relationships are. Like, it predicts so little. And I just think that it's important to remind yourself of that. It's almost like when we were in high school and the biggest thing that's coming up is like prom or, you know, whether or not you're going to have a date or the big homecoming game. It's like all of those things feel monumental at that time. And then once you get older, it's like, wow, that was so, I mean, it was a nice memory, but it was really, really not predictive of anything as you get older.
Every time
so it's just important to remind yourself of
every
that.
Every time I pass a high school football stadium, I think people need to do the same thing, because at the time, you think you're in a Rose Bowl. You think you got 105,000 people there, national TV and everything else, and you realize it's about 20 bored parents and the cheerleaders and that kind of thing. Thank you, Dr. Judy. Appreciate it. Dr. Judy Ho, clinical forensic neuropsychologist, host of the Supercharged Life podcast. I will add a phrase to it. Chill out, butt out, and back off. 9:54, we'll see what Newell's got for us when we come back on WWL.
The PGA Tour is all systems go, and so is the new show, Early Wedge, on the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Sportsline experts Sia Nejad, Mike McClure, and Eric Cohen alongside myself, Rick Gaiman, Patrick McDonald, and Jason Sobel. Five times per week, the Early Wedge provides the best information for DFS lineups, outright selections, and so much more. Follow and listen to Early Wedge in the Early Edge feed on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.